Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Wellbeing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Bwahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge.
Where our guest today is Rodney Mano. He's going to talk to us about the connection and the link between mental health, well-being, and performance. How do we create positive, healthy environments in which both leaders and team members can thrive? Rodney is having a really interesting career, moving seamlessly between the not-for-profit and for-profit world. He has worked for Cineplex, Spin Master, Habitat for Humanity GTA, and now the Mental Health Commission of Canada. The commission believes that everyone should get a chance to achieve their full health potential. I know that Rodney, as a leader, is committed to employee well-being, knowing that it ignites well-doing. Rodney is also a father who encourages his children to pursue their passions, which sounds like it's mainly basketball. It was clear to me in our prep call that Rodney is a consummate coach, both on and off the court, both at home and at work. Welcome, Rodney.
It's amazing to be here.
Yes, I'm super excited for our conversation. And so, Rodney, before we explore your expertise on how to inspire good mental health on our team as leaders, we want to focus on getting to know you a little bit better. Our goal on the council is to encourage all leaders to remember to be human-centric. You're human? Let's center on you. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions from the Proust questionnaire. Marcel Proust was a writer and an essayist, and he used to use these questions in his parlor games, fun and exciting guy he was, because he felt that the answers to these questions would reveal the true identity and nature of the person. So I have a couple of questions for you, Rodney. Which talent would you most like to have?
For me, I think I'd love to sing. I can't sing at all. But whenever I hear someone sing, I'm mesmerized by just how they can shut a room down and everyone's so focused on them. So I think singing is an incredible talent. I'd love to sing.
Amazing. And if you were to die and were to come back as a person or thing, what would it be?
This is a tough one. I think I'd like to come back as a person, and it would probably be Kobe Bryant. And I say this because there's a couple of things. One, I think that, you know, we shared a very similar past. I love playing basketball. He played basketball. You know, his daughter, Gianna, was an amazing basketball player, just a true athlete, incredible father. So I'd love to spend a little time in his shoes and just get a kind of see the world from his lens.
Oh, that's the both amazing answers, and certainly we see your passion for basketball yet again. The theme has arisen yet again, so that's amazing. So, Rodney, let's talk a little bit about mental health. So, mental health has become mainstream and a topic both in the workplace and in society, which is a great thing, right? Removing stigmas and understanding how we can support. I'm not always sure that we've also focused on what good mental health looks like in the workplace. What does good mental health look like for employees and leaders?
So I think that there's a couple of things, and I'm also a little under the weather, so I apologize if I kind of cough, et cetera. But so there's a couple of things. One, I think that, you know, mental health isn't the same for everybody. So it could show up differently. And I think good mental health is quite personal. So one thing that is important is we should, you know, really avoid that one size fits all approach when it comes to really understanding what good mental health looks like, especially for individuals and or leaders just kind of in the workplace. I think the best advice I would give leaders is to truly know your team. And in knowing your team, you'll be able to identify if something may seem a little out of sorts, and you'll be able to zoom in if something isn't right. In terms of maybe some broad stroke things, I'd say a great workplace would have open communication. You know, there would be balance and you know, between kind of work expectations and abilities for people to have time for self-care and personal time with family. There would be support systems to kind of help create that balance with work. Individuals would be resilient, but they would have great coping skills, and overall the work environment would be quite positive. Individuals would feel engaged and feel like they could contribute.
Right. And when you and I spoke too, and I love what you say about the not one size fits all or ensure that you know your team, because I think when you and I spoke, you also, we talked about not to estimate somebody or underestimate somebody who might seem always really positive or seems to have it all or is a high performer, that they too, right, may maybe expand a little bit on that when we were talking about that in our call.
Yeah, I think part of the challenges with workplaces is that we tend to double down on high performers. We rely on them a lot. We rely on them to take on a lot. And sometimes we may not be able to take that moment to zoom in to ensure that they're doing well as well. Like they, you know, high performers have a strong output. Typically, they put work in front of their own well-being. And I think it's really important for especially leaders in the workplace to stay close to that, to understand that even the highest thoroughbreds in the workplace, you know, it's important to ensure that they're running at a pace that's sustainable and doesn't hurt them in the long term.
I think that's super important, right? Because I think that also leads to burnout at all kinds of levels and potentials or performances. But certainly, you know, we don't want our employees to burn out, those high potentials to burn out.
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, I also think what's really interesting is sometimes when people hit that point where they need to hit a reset, it could happen just, you know, without warning, where individuals, you know, realize like they're not in a good place, you know, they're not sleeping, et cetera. So, you know, it's really important not to underestimate the impacts high performers can have on themselves in terms of their own good, positive mental health.
Exactly. And it can be a tipping point. If something else happens in their life, the child is sick, a parent passes away, right? The other part, the partner loses their job, and all of a sudden it crashes. And I just was thinking of a colleague of mine who was telling me a story similar to that. So what is the good link between good mental health and workplace performance? I mean, you've kind of touched on it a bit. What can I do as a leader to boost performance by developing team members' mental health?
So I think maybe we start off with, you know, mental health in the workplace, you know, is really about the psychological well-being of employees and the overall mental environment of the workplace, where psychological health and safety in the workplace involves creating an environment where employees feel safe and they can be their authentic selves. They can share their feelings, free from discrimination, harassment, bullying, you know, so as a bit of a distinction. You know, I think I shared it this way. I said something like psychological health and safety is kind of that seed in the soil. You know, I think when I think about amazing workplaces, it really centers around psychological health and safety in the workplace. You know, it's really the seed in the soil that creates branches that allow other elements that, you know, we typically talk about in leadership or in a people plan to flourish, like EDI, et cetera. Like it's hard to unlock the powers of EDI without a psychologically safe workplace. So for me, I think it starts with, you know, the ability to create a psychologically safe workplace where people feel engaged, they feel like they could be their authentic selves. It drives retention, you know, it supports connection and relationships. And really a leader's role in the ability to do that is really around promoting open dialogue, being available, be vulnerable, promote mental health resources, conduct regular check-ins, you know, foster open dialogue and allow people to be able to, you know, connect with you and be available and just really understand the people that work for you as people. You mentioned it earlier, this concept of being human-centric. I agree. You know, it's understand that people are people and we need to understand how they're doing. And then when things are out of sorts, it's a great opportunity for the leader to zoom in.
And so I'm thinking of your analogy of the seed and the gardener, right? So it's really nowadays the leader is a gardener. You can't force a carrot to grow. You have to tend it, right? You have to feed it, you have to nurture it, you have to so that it will grow on its own. And I think that changes the dynamic in the workplace when historically, I mean, the workplaces have changed, but we saw more leaders as almost like militaristic terms, right? We're marching our troops into battle and we're directing and we're, you know, the authoritarians in charge. charge. So I think it's also a shift in perspective that we are increasingly finding about leaders. And talk to me about the leader themselves, you know, oftentimes, and I think it sounds a little bit soft or so, you know, heaven forbid, but the leader showing their vulnerability. What does leadership vulnerability mean in creating that psychological safety, Rodney?
I think step one is, if you're not okay, say you're not okay. You know, there was a moment, even just in my own work experience with my team, where I felt overwhelmed. There was a lot that I was dealing with. And, you know, I remember opening a meeting saying, I don't feel like I'm my best self. I feel like there's a lot going on, and I'm, you know, I'm a little at a loss for how I should navigate some of this work. So I think it's, if you're authentic and vulnerable, it allows others to, and sometimes it's a challenge because it could make you feeling vulnerable could be misunderstood as a weakness or, you know, not being a high performer. But I think being vulnerable is being honest and being a human, you know, and, you know, even when I think about, like, I was recently at an offsite and we were chatting about CEOs, and CEOs are really this like really lonely role, and they're also people. So when you think about, like, say, for instance, welcoming a new CEO into an organization, it's tough. It's tough because there isn't a huge safety blanket for them. They need to kind of be this constant individual who's always on, but they're probably struggling with not having the right answers and being challenged as well. So I think fundamentally, being vulnerable is incredibly important, and people react to it well. And you'll be surprised that people around you can help you.
Nice. It's a leadership tool, right? It's another tool in a toolkit for a leader that is quite effective. So we've talked about the positive, and creating that psychological safety is super important towards positive mental health. We do know, of course, as leaders, that sometimes people struggle. So what role do I play as a leader when I see someone struggling? What should I do, or importantly, what shouldn't I do?
So I think something to definitely not do is to try to diagnose what's happening to them. You know, only professionals can do that. You know, on the commission's website, we have a reference to a mental health continuum. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the continuum is a framework to help you better understand that, you know, individual state when it comes to mental health fluctuates quite a bit. So they're constantly kind of moving from, you know, what could be healthy to reacting to injured to ill, and people could kind of move along this continuum.
Sure.
So I think first and foremost, it's important not to diagnose. Only professionals could do that. I think approaching things with a sense of empathy, you know, understanding where people are, showing compassion, listening. I actually think listening is something really hard to do. As much as we all kind of suggest that we're like great listeners, it's tough. It's tough to just sit and truly listen, and not listen to speak, but just hear what someone has to say. You know, encourage help. So if individuals, you know, may need support, like point them into either if you have some supports as an employer, point them to professional help. I think that's really important. And also being flexible, you know, kind of hearing what they need and kind of thinking about what you could do to meet them where they are.
Nice.
But it's important not to judge, don't minimize their feelings, you know, even don't pressure them to share too much. Like, just kind of sit there and listen to them and avoid any assumptions, and just, you know, ultimately kind of be there for them. And kind of going back to what we opened with, you know, understanding where people are is something dramatically different, and when in need, point them to professional supports.
I think the minimization, I want to draw on that minimization piece that you also spoke about is super important. And sometimes we try to, we're trying to be helpful, and we say, oh, I remember a time when I, or we, right, we go into a coaching moment, or we try to relate through our own stories. And the person, if they're really struggling, they don't care about your story, right? It's really truly about what you said, listen, empathize, and then maybe direct them to the right spot.
Yeah. And I also think one of the reasons why I love being in the function I'm in, you know, working in the people function, is that I view it as probably one of the hardest functions to work in. And I know maybe everyone will say that, but I view it as being difficult because we're in the challenge of dealing with people who are incredibly unique. You know, people are unique. You could have two people doing the exact same job and their experience is very different. And, you know, a leader's job is tough because you need to figure out how to meet both of them where they are to end up, you know, driving a result. So long story short, I think, you know, I love this. I love what I do because it's about kind of trying to meet people where they are. And it's incredibly challenging to do so effectively.
Right, right. So we are in an internet dependent at work and at home, and you know, soon AI, Rodney, will be ubiquitous as organizations embed its use in all aspects and everything we kind of do. What do we need to consider as we're thinking about the future? What do we need to consider about mental health and AI and how employees might respond to its inevitable use in the workplace? And I'm so sorry. I should have said, I'm sorry to hear you're not feeling well.
Yeah, I apologize.
We're human. Yes. even you have runny noses. Even humans have runny noses. Yeah.
Yeah. I woke up with a bit of a fever and, you know, so, but show must go on. And this is super important. So in terms of AI, I'm going to make a bit of a broad stroke statement first around kind of mental health in AI. So there's a lot happening in this space. You know, there's the Artificial Intelligence and Data Act, Bill C-27, that's kind of happening. And there's some guidelines in terms of provinces and territories. So there's a lot of work happening. You know, the Mental Health Commission recently launched a e-mental health strategy, and it touches on AI, you know, in the space of mental health. And I'll just touch on kind of two or one comment that I think is really important. And that is, you know, when we think about AI and we think about establishing guidelines and understanding how to work with AI, I think what's incredibly important, and for us at the commission, it's important in everything we do is involving clinicians and people with lived and living experience. And, you know, I think when we think about these solutions and kind of the intersection with AI, I think it's hugely important. There's, you know, AI, I think, offers a lot of value, but there is still bias in AI and, you know, things to kind of work through. So I think that's really important. You know, understanding data and data privacy is also really important, especially when you think about kind of engaging with such services from the perspective of mental health. At a macro level, I think AI is here to stay. It's going to be a part of, you know, who we are and what we do. I think that, you know, it could create anxiety, you know, for individuals, because there's a lot of talk about AI and, you know, eliminating jobs and, you know, having a kind of a dramatic impact. And, you know, I guess my hope is that AI is more of an enabler. You know, we find ways to kind of work with AI such that it allows us to spend more time doing meaningful things, as well as, you know, helping it kind of resolve things that could be maybe less important from kind of a day-to-day work perspective. But truth be told, I think AI, there's kind of a lot to unpack, especially in the realm of mental health and being a mental health support. And I think we're just early kind of in those stages. So a lot more to happen.
For sure, a lot more to come. I think when you pointed out the anxiety piece, I think that's spot on, right? So even at this stage, as you know, some people who are super tech savvy or in IT, they may be saying, oh, this is great, this is positive, this is going to be so awesome for everyone. And it's, to your point, going to be an enabler. And we have to recognize, though, that for a vast majority of people, there will be anxiety, just as you said. There may be initially some anxiety until it gets figured out. And so I think even just leaders acknowledging that the anxiety could exist and that, you know, that everybody's still working through it, I think would at least be something towards, right, ensuring that there's continued positive mental health or that we're acknowledging that there could be stress and anxiety around it.
Absolutely. You know, it's certainly going to have an impact. You know, it's hard to tell what exactly that'll look like. And I'm a true believer in human-centric things. So I my hope is that it allows us to be more human versus kind of, you know, taking us away from kind of our connection to emotion and things like that.
Amazing. So I'm going to sit on that plane, that hopeful plane with you, Rodney. At the council, as you know, we embed inclusive practices in all the work that we do. So when we're thinking about this, what should I know or do to ensure that I'm inclusive and promoting good mental health?
That's a great question. I think a lot of the rules of engagement, sorry, a lot of the rules of engagement, you know, when you think about just EDI in the workplace still prevail. So I think, you know, and you know, first and foremost, if you have supports, et cetera, available in the workplace to ensure you remove barriers to those supports, I think that you know, we should always celebrate diversity and appreciate that employees' experiences can differ, and to be, you know, to be able to acknowledge that. To think about inclusive policies, especially language. You know, there could be stigmatizing language that we should avoid. You know, I think language matters a lot, especially in the world of mental health. So I think, you know, we have to be mindful of the language that we use, as well as just kind of appreciating diverse perspectives. And I think, you know, if you get kind of a little bit more technical, especially around the space of mental health, you know, being mindful of culturally sensitive supports, whether it be language or traditional healing or culturally competent therapists, you know, that could be kind of that next layer down. And just thinking about, when you think about your broader kind of leadership development, how do you establish or provide some training to leaders so that they're aware of some of these things, you know, again, not from a diagnosing perspective, but just, you know, the ability to kind of appreciate those different experiences that people will have.
And so, and perhaps even just to know what you don't know, right? In the sense
Absolutely.
of some of that education and awareness building is so that I can go, oh, wait a minute, I think something, right? I'm not going to diagnose or I'm not judging, but I just have now my radars have gone up and I go and seek the supports, whether it's, you know, if I'm not in HR, maybe through my HR colleagues or other leaders to understand how can I support my team member in having that awareness. So before I ask you a couple more of my Proust questions that I'm so into at the end of this, we do always like to ask each of our guests for some really practical tips, right? So we want to end this podcast with really practical advice. What is one thing, Rodney? What is one thing as a leader, or two, as a leader that I am going to do today to promote good mental health with my team members?
So I think thing one, so I have two. So I think thing one would be schedule a check-in. You know, it's interesting because when we say things like, do individuals have regular one-on-ones, et cetera, a lot of individuals will say yes, but sometimes you cancel them or you change it or you pick it up next week. You know, tell yourself you're gonna have a check-in with each of your team members. And you know, you want to go beyond just asking how you're doing. You want to say, hey, like, you know, is the work at the right level? You know, is there too much going on? Are you finding it difficult to kind of balance work and you know, kind of what's happening in your personal life? Like, really get a sense of how people are truly doing and get beyond just the surface level question. So I think that's thing one. And thing two, as a leader, do the same for yourself. Ask yourself those questions, and you know, like, allow yourself to be able to share that, you know, with your team, you know, and be vulnerable. I think it goes a long way, and authentic leadership is the best type of leadership.
I really appreciate that notion of be specific about your questions, right? Because we often do that. I know myself, somebody will come into an office, right, for a one-on-one, and be like, hey, how's it going? But that's not really, everybody's going to say fine, right? I mean, unless they have clearly, but until you ask that specific question, they may themselves not step back and reflect on those questions that you had asked. So maybe say those two or three questions again, Rodney, just so that it sticks in our mind. Give us those three examples.
So I'm gonna be candid. I think I just kind of freehanded that, so I don't know if I was.
Freehand some more. Freehand some
Yeah.
more.
But I think it's about kind of zooming in and just asking things like, how are things going in your personal life? Are you finding the time to be able to kind of support what's happening in your personal life? Is the amount of work that you're dealing with fair? Are there things that are just taking up too much of your time? You know, just trying to zoom that next level in, you know, to allow someone to actually speak to you versus answer you. You know, I think
Nice.
that's the important piece. You want a conversation, and I think kind of think about how do you get someone talking to you so you could truly get a sense of how they're doing.
Great. I appreciate that. So I am going to end this podcast with a couple more Proust questions because I'm curious. I've had the great opportunity to meet you a couple times and I get to know you a little bit more through these questions. If you could change one thing about yourself, Rodney, what would it be?
So it's interesting because it's something I kind of like about myself, but I think it could be a little annoying too. So I am just really, really curious about any and everything. You know, I have this curiosity of trying to understand how things work, and it's unrelenting. Like I will scour the earth to understand it. It's just, you know, now the issue is that it could be annoying to others if those individuals are kind of the source of the information I'm interested in. And, you know, it comes from a really good place, but I'm mindful of sometimes my curiosity could be off-putting. So, you know, I think maybe at times to just be curious about things that matter versus being curious about everything, maybe that's what I would change.
Lovely. And who are your heroes in real life, Rodney?
So, you know, I would say this might sound like an odd response, but I think real leaders, you know, and that's not like a person or a thing, but, you know, here's the thing. Real leaders are everywhere. So they're amazing parents, they're amazing coaches, they're amazing teachers, they're amazing friends, they're amazing managers. You know, I think real leaders find ways to help individuals be better, to kind of, you know, achieve their potential, kind of stay on track, stay committed, build resilience. And it's probably the hardest thing to do. You know, you know, I find that there isn't a rule book for this. There isn't just a way, and we're all kind of on this learning journey. And I think real leaders who are committed to that journey, who really want to amplify what others can do, and not kind of put themselves on kind of stage, but, you know, support others to kind of get on stage. I think those are real heroes. And and there are just real moments where you saw that. I think when COVID happened, there was this remark that, you know, we have to evolve from managers to being a leader in light of what was happening at the time, you know, and in the absence of connection with people, you know, people really needed to be leaders and to find genuine ways to connect with people. And it was this moment where leadership, real leadership shined, and you saw a difference between managing and leading. So I think real leaders are pretty amazing. You see them everywhere. Like Kobe, I think, was a real leader.
Thanks, Rodney. I knew you were a mensch. And I also knew I was going to enjoy our conversation together. So I want to thank you on behalf of the Employee Wellbeing Council for giving us your time and for joining us, the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast. Thanks so much, Rodney.
Thank you.
I hope you feel better soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.